Hey, everybody, it's Michael Steele here. Now, I know you're waiting for the next big episode of the Michael Steele Podcast, but in the meantime, give a listen to this Michael Steele Podcast Quick Take.
We're having a great conversation with my buddy Bill Kristol. Bill is the host of the podcast Conversations with Bill Kristol. He is founder of the Weekly Standard, was the founder of the Weekly Standard, and now is the editor at large of the news and opinion website, The Bulwark, which you have to check out. So, Bill, what's your thoughts? Let's get on a little bit of a policy. Well, actually, before I do that, because I wanted to zero in on the point you made about the filibuster. What is your take on the strategy here? Now, just I'll put on front of you my view real quick. I'm a student of the long game and consequences. So for me, if I'm going to make that kind of move, even if I'm going to make it for something as narrow as the Voting Rights Act, we're going to, you know, do away with the filibuster, et cetera. It does open the door. And so precedentially, you've got to be prepared for what the Republicans will do the next time around. And so I get the caution that Biden and Schumer are exhibiting right now to the chagrin and frustration of their left flank. But what's your take on how this should play out? And what are the disadvantages or maybe even advantages that could come from it?
Yeah, I'm, cautious about it also. And it's why I certainly wouldn't I'm just dubious about the filibuster as an overall institution in the Senate. I don't really think it increases compromise or moderation much. But leaving that aside, it exists. It has constrained both parties. And as a conservative with a small C, one probably should be a little cautious about changing things that have existed for a while, even if it's 30 or 40 years, not 200 years, obviously.
Right.
I do think the voting rights situation is urgent enough that it justifies, and redistricting probably, that it justifies looking for an exception for that. Now, it does open the door. There's no question. On the other hand, it's a little hard to say to Democrats, Mitch McConnell gets to confirm Supreme Court justices for lifetime, with 51, 52 votes, and jam them through, in the last month before presidential election, having stopped Garland and so forth. And you don't get to pass something that will really preserve people's right to vote or make it a lot easier, as it was in 2020, because of the filibuster. I'm friendly to breaking the filibuster, especially on the voting redistricting issues. Now, look, it's the problem right now isn't what you say, what I say. It's what Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema say and whether they're willing to go along. And that's a persuasion question and a political question for Biden and Schumer. I do think H.R. 1, I had this argument with someone yesterday.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think, look, maybe that's the hand we've got to play. And at some point, people like, they're just going to go for that. And people like you and I, not that I suppose we'll have much influence at that point, we'll have to say yes or no. We would be for making the filibuster for that or for passing that whole bill. But I do think it muddies the waters because there's a lot of stuff in there. Some of it's okay, ethics and government, it's your tax returns. Some of it's dubious, I would say, the ACLU's against parts of it for curtailing speech, requiring you to make your name public if you give money to even to something like Defending Democracy Together, if it spends any money on elections. So I'm not friendly, not a big fan of that part of it. Public financing, that's something that I've never been a big fan of at the federal level, at least. Mm-hmm. So I just think they would have a much cleaner argument if they took the voting provisions of H.R. 1, made them maybe a little less prescriptive. We don't need to tell every state exactly how many days of early voting they have. Just make sure there's enough to sort of let people vote. And the same with how they run the absentee and so forth. Put in the John Lewis Voting Rights Act stuff.
Right.
Make that the Emergency Voting Rights Act.
Right.
You'd have a case, and I think people like me in good faith would say, yeah, this is one where you really need to. You cannot let the fact that Republicans are digging in on this, let Arizona and these other states, Georgia, curb voting rights. So that would be, I prefer the narrower, slimmer H.R. 1, voting rights focused version of H.R. 1. Maybe add an H.R. 4, which is the John Lewis Act. Right. And then if they give Republicans a chance to debate it and vote on it, let's see what happens.
Sure, see what happens with it.
Maybe some of them will. But if they don't, I think that would be the way to lay the predicate for doing it in the best way.
How do you assess Biden at this point? I have to give him kudos on a number of levels, from his approach to the pandemic, which has been consistent. And I guess it's just refreshing to hear, you know, someone just kind of say, okay, let me just tell you the real truth here. And this is what it is. And then back it up with demonstrable evidence. But how do you assess where Biden is as president, some, you know, 70, 80 days in?
No, I think it's been impressive. I mean, there are things I would do a tiny bit differently. I hope they can get some more people confirmed. I've talked to people in there, and I mean, they just don't have many assistant secretaries and stuff yet. And that's,
right.
And, you know, it's hard to run these agencies, and they got a ton of things to deal with. So, but on the whole, I think impressive. You know, I was looking this morning at some stuff online. Europe is going back into some shutdowns where the new variants, and they've let it get a little out of control. They haven't done a very good job on the vaccines. And so at the end of the day, under Trump, I'd say we underperformed compared to Europe in terms of the pandemic. We had a higher death rate than much of Europe. And now with Biden, we're overperforming. So that's a pretty simple index. And it's a little oversimple because, of course, some of the things Biden's doing, Trump started and so forth. But I think that's a fair way to praise Biden. And I think, again, the stimulus, whatever it was, the economic relief package wasn't perfect, but it will end up doing good, doing some good. And he's been sober and a good model of how a president should behave, a good contrast with Trump. And his numbers are good. His popularity is good, which is good for him going forward. He has some political capital. So and it's been good for the country, I think. So I'm quite impressed with the Biden presidency, as I was with the campaign. Now, having said that, the one thing I will say, I was thinking about this last night. I mean, they are facing a ton of challenges. I mean, people who are sort of thinking, yeah, Biden's done great. And, you know, he got the COVID thing out there. But I mean, if you think about everything from the voting rights issues to immigration to climate change to just a ton of regular kind of healthcare, you know, the normal issues that deal with. And then the kinds of surprises, the border, the kinds of things that happen that you can't quite control, the world we're in. I mean, it's going to be, you know, they're going to have their hands full. I'm sure they'll mess up one or two things or in retrospect make some decisions that weren't perfect. But I think both he personally has done well. The administration seems pretty competent, pretty well organized, pretty focused on the big things. Isn't getting too distracted by, you know, little fights, pretty high quality people in there. So, no, I'm pretty impressed.
How's he done at the border? How do you assess that? Right now, given the influx of El Salvadorians, Guatemalan children coming across the border, and you just get the sense that a lot of the Trumpists are sitting there just waiting to say, "Gotcha, told you so." See, you know, where are those cages? You know, how do you assess this storyline, because it's dominating right now. It is tricky on a good day, given the huge influx of these young people coming in and the lack of facilities to really accommodate and house them, which they seem to have figured out a way to start to do that. But, you know, now you're playing catch up. How is your assessment of that in light of what you was just saying about overall? But noting, hey, yeah, there are going to be some hiccups, and this may be one of them.
Yeah, and some things you just can't control, really, and also some things that Trump left you in a very bad situation to deal with, including the failure to cooperate. I mean, I was in government when we on our way out to the George H.W. Bush administration.
Right.
And the failure to cooperate in the transition, which is kind of an inside baseball thing, no one pays attention to it. Everyone's forgotten about, frankly, because of January 6th becoming the dominant story, as it should be, of those months. But it does make it harder just to get going. And the fact is DHS was not cooperative. Everyone agrees on this, I think, and which meant they couldn't really it turns out they need a lot. I talked to Elizabeth Newman, who worked there. I mean, they need a lot more resources, but they didn't kind of realize that quite right away. They probably should now have gone to Congress and gotten some more quickly. And I guess now they are doing some things with, you know, to house these refugees and people who are coming across the border without documents and treat the kids in a humane way, but also figure out how to get them back with their parents. It's not easy. I think I wouldn't panic. I mean, I think they've got, you know, from a political point of view, Fox can scream and yell about it, but it will, what matters is how they deal with it over the next weeks and months. And I think most sane people understand that these things are challenging, and they're going to it'll look bad for now, and will be a little bad for now, honestly. But that doesn't mean that you can't, they can't recoup. And they do seem to be sort of, I think they're very aware that they can't let it just go on for weeks and months this way. So, but these are real challenges in the real world. I mean, I was in the federal government, you were in the state government. I mean, it's not like you can just snap your fingers and fix certain things.
No.
And so they, but I think showing seriousness, not minimizing it, not politicizing it to the degree they can't, go to Congress if you need some resources, and then let the Republicans scream and yell. But at the end of the day, are you going to give people resources to build the facilities they need near the border or not, and or hire the people they need? And not just, you know, border patrol officers, but also health, you know, workers and others to help. So I think you can be humane, but also, you know, law enforce, but also enforce the law.
Yeah. Right.
And that's what they have to do. But that's it's going to be a challenge. And there's no question.
Thanks for downloading this Michael Steele podcast quick take. Now, you can always find us on Apple Podcasts, where guess what? You can review us. You can give us 5 stars. Oh, yeah. I love the 5-star rating. Or you can catch us on iHeart, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts. See you soon.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to LostGolfBalls.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.